Warner Brothers presents A Little Princess.
A very long time ago, there lived a beautiful princess in a mystical land known as India.
Audio described by Penelope Parisi on behalf of MCS Agency. In the enchanted forest by the banks of a river.
She was married to the handsome Prince Rama, who had been banished to the enchanted forest by his jealous stepmother, Queen Kaikeyi. One day, Princess Sita saw a wounded deer in the woods, and she begged Rama to go and help it. Rama drew a circle in the ground and said to her, "This is a magic circle. So long as you stay inside it, no harm can come to you." That night, the princess heard a horrible cry.
"Ah! Help me!"
Thinking it was her beloved Rama in danger, the princess ran from the circle to answer the cry. Came across an old beggar man. Although she had no money to give him, she could not refuse his plea. As soon as he had the bracelet, the beggar suddenly transformed into the ten-headed demon Ravana. He grabs the princess and takes her to his palace, where he intends to make her his bride. Did you ever know a real Prince Maya?
Yes, Lucky's father.
I thought he was in the army.
He was, and he was my prince, and I his princess.
But I mean real princes and princesses.
All women are princesses. It is our right.
Simla, India, 1914. An elephant bays in the river beside them. Later, the young girl and her Indian boy companion run through the forest. A montage of shots showing the beautiful Indian countryside, waterfalls, meandering rivers, and a burnt orange sunset over the magnificent Taj Mahal. The young girl sits talking with her father in her bedroom.
I shall miss it here. India's the only place on earth that stirs the imagination.
I wish we could stay here forever.
I know, sweetheart. But now that England's gone to war, I must go too. You understand that, don't you?
But why must I go to America?
Because it's safer. And besides, you'll be going to the same school your mother went to when she was your age. In a city called?
New York. Papa?
Mm-hmm?
Maya told me that all girls are princesses.
Maya is a very wise woman.
Then it's true?
You can be anything you want to be, my love, as long as you believe.
What do you believe?
I believe that you are, and always will be, my little princess.
Her father leans forward and kisses her tenderly on her forehead as she lies on her bed, surrounded by mosquito nets. A map of the world. A route is traced from India to Britain and then across the Atlantic Ocean. At night, a large passenger ship called the SS Christina Eliza. The young girl stands on deck, looking out to sea. Her father comes up behind her and fastens a locket around her neck.
I gave this to your mother on her wedding day. I want you to have it.
She was so beautiful. What did you love most about her?
Tough question. I love the way her eyes lit up when she laughed. Just like yours do. I love the sound of her voice when she sang me the Indian folk song. But I think, more than anything else, I loved dancing with her.
Captain Cruz sweeps his daughter Sarah off of her feet as he swirls her round and round on the deck of the boat. The map shows the east coast of America as the boat approaches its destination, New York. On the corner of a New York street, a large poster advertises an around the world cruise in 110 days on the SS Victoria Louise from $650. A horse-drawn carriage rattles past the poster, transporting Sarah and her father. They arrive outside a door with a sign adjacent to it reading, Miss Minchin's Seminary for Girls, established 1856. Captain Crewe rings the doorbell, while Sarah, dressed in a smart cream coat and hat, looks up at the rather imposing green building. Sarah smiles and climbs the steps to join her father by the front door.
Hello! You must be Captain Crewe. My sister will be down presently. We were just preparing the young lady's room. Your beautiful things arrived this morning.
Thank you,
Oh, heavens, Amelia. Amelia Minchin.
Captain Crewe.
In the hallway, a lady appears at the top of a grand flight of stairs. Sarah nervously watches her as she glides down the stairs with a fixed smile on her face.
How delightful to meet you. And this must be little Sarah. My, what a beautiful child.
I was just telling the
Thank captain. You, Amelia. That will be all. Now, won't you both follow me? Classes begin promptly at 8 o'clock. We cover all the subjects, literature, math, science, and, of course, both French and Latin.
Oh, well, Sarah speaks fluent.
Luncheon is served at 1:30, after which we take our daily walk. Unless, of course, the weather is extremely inclement. From 4 o'clock, the girls attend classes in etiquette, where they are personally trained in all the formal graces of society.
Study hall is between 4:30 and 6:30, followed by a light supper. And then, before bedtime, we read from one of the classics, something the children always look forward to with great anticipation. Sunday is a day of rest. Students are allowed to write only to their parents. And, of course, we attend church. Have you any questions?
Puzzled, Sarah stops in a corridor. She watches a young black girl in a pinafore mopping the floor.
Come along, dear.
Je mange, tu manges.
Excusez-moi, Monsieur Defarge. Girls, I would like you to say hello to our new arrival, Miss Sarah Crewe.
Hello, Sarah.
You must tell them all about your exciting life in India. No doubt you'll be our most popular student in no time. Now, there are certain rules that should be made quite clear. The first is the order rule, which requires the girls to keep their rules.
Sarah stands at the front of a classroom, looking at a sea of faces of all the girls sitting at their desks. They all wear a dark green uniform with a large ribbon positioned in their hair. Her eye is drawn to one particular girl, who deliberately dips the ends of the hair of the girl sitting directly in front of her into her ink pot. She glares defiantly at Sarah as she does so.
Word, look, or manner, these rules are strictly enforced. But I can assure you, Captain Crewe, the results are well worth the effort. Our reputation for sending the most poised and charming young ladies into society is one of the highest.
I've no doubt.
Also, I'm afraid jewelry and such finery are not allowed.
What if I wear it in my room during my free time?
Well, if you absolutely insist.
I do.
She's gonna get in so much trouble.
Monsieur?
Je mens.
Je mange.
Tu manges.
Tu manges.
Sarah is shown to her room.
This is splendid.
It's our largest suite.
Thank you for all the care you've taken, Miss Minchin. I want Sarah to feel as much at home as possible while I'm away. No expense shall be spared.
Of course not. Now I'll let you two say your goodbyes. I know you don't have much time before your boat leaves.
Miss Minchin leaves them alone in the ornate room. Captain Crewe crosses the room to the windows. Sarah looks sadly at all her belongings piled up in the room.
We write to each other every day.
Sarah joins her father by the window.
How do you like your room? I made sure it was the best. With corner windows and a fireplace. And with all your toys and clothes moved in, it's just as if you were really... You know, I think I saw something. On that chair over there. She came all the way from France just to be with you. Her name is Emily.
Emily.
You know, dolls make the very best friends. Just because they can't speak doesn't mean they don't listen. And did you know that when we leave them alone in our room, they come to life?
They do?
Yes. But before we walk in and catch them, they return to their place as quick as lightning.
Why don't they come to life in front of us so we can see them?
Because it's magic. Magic has to be believed. That's the only way it's real. Whenever you're afraid or miss me terribly, just tell Emily. And she'll get a message to me wherever I am. And then I'll send one back right away so that when you hug her, you'll really be getting a hug from me. Memorizing me by heart.
Oh. I already know you by heart.
Sarah sits on her father's lap. Captain Crewe cuddles Sarah tightly. A short while later, Sarah watches from her window as her father climbs back onto the horse-drawn carriage on the cobbled street below. Sarah, clinging hold of Emily, reaches her hand up to the window as the carriage pulls away. A solitary tear rolls down her cheek as the carriage disappears down the street. The next day, in a grand dining hall, with paintings hanging on the walls and a large fireplace, the girls sit around a large banqueting table.
Crackers or something. They're very rich.
They must be. Everyone I know eats crackers.
Her father's British. I heard he's best friends with the king and queen.
Huh. Well, I heard he was thrown out of India because people died from eating his poison crackers.
Poison crackers?
Poison crackers?
I once had an aunt who died from eating poison string beans.
Oh, who cares about her?
Yeah, who cares?
But before we walk in and catch them, they return to their place as quick as lightning.
Gosh, she's fast.
Sarah closes her bedroom door, then peers through the keyhole, checking on Emily. As she descends the stairs, she ties up a white apron that she is wearing, then stops to look at photographs on the wall.
Mama.
Sarah, we're not accustomed to delaying everyone's breakfast for one student.
I'm sorry, Miss Minchin, but I found my mom...
You're not the only child here, Sarah. You must remember that.
Oh,
Bonjour, Monsieur Dufarge. Comment êtes-vous aujourd'hui?
Yes. Good morning.
I trust you remember our newest pupil from our visit to your class yesterday. Sarah, this is Monsieur Dufarge. You will begin French lessons with him this afternoon.
Do I have to?
Sarah, you most certainly do. Now apologize to Monsieur this instant for your rudeness.
But I didn't mean to be rude.
Now!
Monsieur, je regrette. Mais je sais parler français. J'ai étudié en Inde avec mon père, qui habitait à Paris quand il était un petit garçon.
This child doesn't need to learn French. She practically is French. Says she learned it from her father.
I understood perfectly well what she said, Monsieur.
I'm sorry, but we tried to tell you.
Well, perhaps she can tutor the younger children, and she might just be able to help you with your pronunciation, Miss Meacham. Are those sausages I smell? Oh.
In the dining hall, the girls sit silently around the table. The young girl who was mopping the floor serves them breakfast.
Thank you.
Sarah, there's no talking at the table.
Doesn't seem natural.
I won't say it again.
Later in the classroom.
7 times 5 is 35. 7 times 6 is 42. 7 times 7 is 49.
7 times 8 is 58. No, wait. 54? No, 55?
Or 72? Or 93? Or 12?
I'm sorry, Miss Minchin. I studied for hours last night.
I find that very hard to believe. And I imagine your father will as well.
Please don't tell him, Miss Minchin. I promise I'll do better. Please.
Lavinia, you may continue.
7 times 8 is 56. 7 times 9 is 63. 7 times 5 is 35. 7 times 6 is 42. 7 times 7 is 49. 8 times 2 is...
Dear Papa, I miss you already. Things are fine. Except I never imagined there would be so many rules at school. I guess they are there for a purpose, and I'm trying hard to obey them. But I get the feeling I'm doing something wrong.
Sarah sits writing a letter to her father on the window ledge in her bedroom. She pauses as she notices a man in military uniform saying an emotional goodbye to his father on the street below. Sarah is saddened by the scene, and a tear cascades down her pretty face, landing on her letter, smudging the ink as it does so. Her father sits reading her letter in an army tent.
I hope when you read this, it kindles your heart and puts a smile on your face. Papa, I'm so proud of you, and I think about you every moment, and I love you forever. Yours, Sarah.
Sister. But that doesn't mean I can't talk to her. I tell her everything, and I know she hears me.
How?
Because that's what angels do.
Your mama's an angel?
Of course. And so is yours. With beautiful wings of silk and a crown of baby rosebuds. And And they all live together in a castle. Do you know what it's made of? Sunflowers. Hundreds of them. So bright they shine like gold. And when the angels want to go someplace, they just whistle like this. And a cloud floats to the castle door and picks them up. And as the angels fly through the sky, riding the cloud like a magic carpet, under the moon and through the stars, until they're hovering right above us. That's how they can look down and see if we're all right. And sometimes they even send messages to us. Of course, you can't hear the messages if you are kicking and screaming as loudly as you were. But they always try again, just in case we've missed it. Hey, wait!
That's Becky. She's not allowed to talk to us.
Why not?
She's a servant girl, and she has Stark's gift.
So?
Well, doesn't that mean something?
Sarah follows Becky up a flight of stairs to the top of the building. Once in the attic, Sarah opens the door to the servants' quarters. She spies on Becky as she rubs a block of ice over her sore feet, whilst humming to herself.
Came up here to change my shoes.
No, there's nothing.
Well then, begging your pardon, but we'll both be in trouble if you stay.
All right, girls, pair up. Pair up.
On a wet and dreary autumn day, the children are led out of the seminary in pairs. Meanwhile, Becky enters her room to find a parcel placed on a table. A note on the package reads, "Dear Becky, I hope we can still be friends. Sarah." She takes the lid off of the box to find inside a pair of fancy yellow shoes with a fur trim. Delighted, Becky takes them out of the box, hugs them tightly, then tries them on. Later that day, the girls sit with bored expressions on their faces before a fire in the drawing room. They are listening to Lavinia Reed.
Sir Edward saw the sorrow in his daughter's eyes, but he knew that family honor must prevail at all costs. Nobility was not a thing to be trifled with. "I beg of you, Charlotte," he said. "Marry Sir John in the spring as he has asked."
"Thank you, Lavinia. Sarah, you may take your turn."
With a stern look on her face, Lavinia hands Sarah the book.
Charlotte turned to her father and said, "Father, you are right. I must put away my foolish fancies and childhood wishes."
Sarah stops reading and looks around the room at all the restless girls, two of which are falling asleep on each other's shoulders.
"But I simply won't do it. I'm sorry, Father, but when I marry it will be for love." And with that, Charlotte ran from the house. Waiting outside for her was the handsome stable boy Pierre, whom Charlotte secretly adored. Together, they escaped to the coast and quickly set sail for the island of Tahiti. But when they were halfway there, their ship was attacked by a band of pirates. Rather than be eaten alive, Charlotte and Pierre threw themselves into the raging sea. And as they began to drown, they held each other close and swore their undying love. But then, when all seemed lost, a group of mermaids appeared and rescued...
Stop! What are you doing?
I c-
couldn't bear to see Charlotte marry that awful man, so I imagined a different ending.
You imagined it.
Don't you ever do that, Miss Minchin? Believe in something just to make it seem real?
I suppose that's rather easy for a child who has everything. Well, from now on, there will be no more make-believe at this school, during reading hour or at any other time. Is that understood?
Yes, Miss Minchin.
All of you go to your bed this instant.
I never heard a story like that in my whole life. I bet you know lots of them, don't you, Sarah?
I want silence up there!
We have to do something about this communication rule.
Hey, after Minchin goes to bed, we'll sneak into your room and you can tell us what a real story is.
Yes. How about it, Sarah?
Well, only if it's just you three.
Come in, wait.
In the drawing room, Miss Minchin plucks away angrily at the strings on her harp. Upstairs, the girls change for bed. Then a group of them pile into Sarah's room. They all sit on the bed together. Becky stands on the landing, watching over the balustrade.
The evil Ravana locked the princess up in his palace tower. There she stayed for many weeks, just staring out her window, missing her Prince Rana terribly.
The Indian princess sits solemnly at a window of a tower overlooking a mountain range.
Bonjour, papa. Je suis très contente de vous voir.
Bonjour, papa. Je suis très contente de vous voir.
Perfect. You look just like Emily.
My father hates dolls. And he hates coming here. Says he doesn't belong.
And why does he send you?
Because he wants me to belong.
Upstairs, the two girls prepare to meet the parents gathered in the hallway. Sarah, carrying Emily, slowly descends the stairs, looking for her beloved father.
My little girl, she spoke French. Did she really speak French?
She speaks French.
Sarah stands alone at the bottom of the stairs as she watches all of her classmates meet up with their parents. Across the crowded room by the front door, she sees a tall man in uniform. She darts through the guests, trying to catch up with the man as he exits the school. On the street outside, she discovers it's not her father.
Papa!
Meanwhile, on the battlefield, her father is in the trenches, surrounded by dead bodies. Sorrowfully, he staggers through the soldiers littered around him. One man lies dead with a picture of his baby still in his hands. Bombs carry on dropping around him as he continues to check on the dead soldiers. He notices one man gasping for breath and raising his fingers. Captain Crewe rushes to the aid of the mud-splattered man lying in a heap on the floor.
Randolph? John!
Rama approached the thorny palace, unaware that Ravana was waiting for him.
In Lavinia's bedroom, a girl brushes Lavinia's long brown hair as other friends sit watching them.
That's it!
I can't take it anymore. I don't care what you say about Sarah's stories. They've got to be more fun than watching your hair being combed.
If anyone else feels the same way, I think she should leave too.
All the girls get up and leave, choosing to go to Sarah's room instead.
But the evil Ravana was not through yet.
This time he took a bow that could hold not one, but 10 arrows, each filled with a deadly poison.
The arrows sped through the air, heading straight for Rana.
And the arrows hit the ground and released their poison. Giant clouds of thick, yellow smoke.
Meanwhile, in the trenches, Captain Crewe carries John Randolph over his shoulder as planes continue to fly overhead. The trench starts to fill up with smoke. Captain Crewe covers his nose and face with a handkerchief. Exhausted, he uses all of his strength to climb up a ladder to the edge of the trench, still carrying John on his back. Shattered, he collapses to the ground in a heap. At the seminary, Sarah blows out the candles on an elaborate three-tiered birthday cake. Her friends and Miss Minchin gather round watching her.
Oh, hush up, Lottie. I'm sure Princess Sarah will give everyone a fair share. Right, Princess?
I told her that's what you were.
Well, not just me. All girls are princesses. Even snotty two-faced bullies like you, Lavinia.
Amelia Minchin plays on the piano while Miss Minchin goes to open the front door.
Miss Minchin?
Yes, may I help you?
I'm Mr. Barrow. Captain Crewe's solicitor.
Oh, yes, do come in. We're just celebrating little Sarah's birthday.
May I speak to you in private?
Oh, yes, of course. Right this way.
From an open doorway, Becky, carrying a large basket of washing, watches the girls enjoying Sarah's party. Sarah spots her and smiles sweetly at her, giving her a little wave. Coyly, Becky smiles and waves back.
May I just say, Mr. Barrow, that Sarah is quite the favourite around here. We went to great lengths to make this a special day for her.
Miss Minchin leads him down a corridor to a private room.
I'm afraid your check to us this month will be rather large.
There will be no check, Miss Minchin.
Excuse me?
Miss Minchin closes off all the doors to the private room while the children continue to play games at the party. The solicitor is in the hall. He replaces his hat and heads out of the front door. Miss Minchin appears from her study with a stern look on her face. Marching through the girls, she stomps over to her sister and stops her playing on the piano.
The party is over. I want everyone to go to their rooms this instant.
But Miss Minchin...
Sarah, you will stay behind. I have something to tell you. Amelia, go to Sarah's room and find a simple black dress. If she has nothing suitable, borrow one from the other girls.
But, sister, I...
Do as I say.
Slowly, Sarah follows Miss Minchin into her study. Miss Minchin takes a seat behind her desk.
I'm afraid I have some bad news, Sarah. Your father... It's been discovered that your father has died. He was killed in battle several weeks ago. I'm sorry. But that's the reality of the situation, and there's nothing anyone can do to change it. What's more, the British government has seized control of his company and all of his assets, leaving you penniless, without any money. And since you have no relations to speak of, this puts me in a terrible position. What are you staring at? Don't you understand what I'm saying? You are alone in the world. Unless I decide to keep you here, out of charity.
Sarah lays out her uniform on her bed. Then, clutching hold of a book and her doll, she follows Miss Minchin along the landing.
Because of the expenses you've incurred, everything you own now belongs to me. Your clothes, your toys, everything. Though it will hardly make up for the financial losses I have suffered. From now on, you must earn your room and board here. You will move to the attic with Becky and work as a servant. If you fail to meet the standards of this institution, or if you don't do as you're told, you'll be thrown out. And believe me, Sarah, the streets of this city are not kind to homeless beggars. Report to Mabel in the kitchen promptly at 5 a.m. I could have you arrested for taking this. You're lucky I let you keep that doll. You have the book. But another incident like this, and I will call the authorities. I expect you to remember, Sarah Crewe. You are not a princess any longer.
Desolate, Sarah stands in the dark attic room holding a candle. Tears brim in her large eyes. She flops down onto the bed. Then looking up to the ceiling, she sees a collection of pigeons gathered on the rafters. Sarah gets up from the bed and places the candle into a candlestick holder that she finds on the floor. Finding a piece of chalk, she draws a circle on the floorboards, which she then lays within, clutching hold of her precious Emily. The next morning, dressed in drab servant's clothes and with her hair swept up under a cloth hat, Sarah enters the dining hall with a large serving bowl of porridge in her hands. She stops and pauses as she enters the room, looking embarrassed and uncomfortable.
Sarah, what happened?
Sarah, You're to serve the girls without conversation. Do you understand? Sarah will be working here as a servant from now on. There will be no communication exchanged. Is that clear?
Yes, Miss Minchin.
Madame, je suis pas d'accord.
Bonjour, monsieur.
Later, Sarah continues her chores, mopping the wooden floor in a long hallway. Slowly, she cleans the floor down the length of the corridor. With a solemn look on her face, she perseveres with the back-breaking task, cleaning the floor until it gleams. Lavinia appears in the corridor and takes great delight in putting footprints along the length and breadth of the corridor. She stops for a moment and turns to look at Sarah with a look of superiority and disdain. Later, out on the streets of New York, Sarah is jostled as she runs an errand. Carrying a large basket of provisions, a young boy tries to steal some food from her. As she continues to walk along the street, a gust of wind whips up, removing Sarah's shawl from around her shoulders. It floats off down the street. Sarah runs after it. The shawl lands wrapped around the feet of an Indian man, wearing a golden robe, with a monkey in a red jacket sitting on his shoulder. Sarah stares up at the man's kind face.
Great God! It can't be! It's my son, John! Oh, dear God! No, not John! It's John, Randolph! John! Help me!
Goodness sake. Where was she gone?
The Indian man, Ram Dass, then comforts an old man as he is delivered some bad news by two army officials. Later, Sarah's in her room.
I thought you'd be sleeping. I never got a chance to give you your birthday present. It's a picture of where you used to live. See the blue threads? That's the river. And these are the mountains you always talk about.
Thank you, Becky. It's beautiful.
Sarah, why don't you tell your stories anymore?
They're just make-believe. They don't mean anything.
Oh, but they've always meant something to me. There were days I thought I would die until I heard you talk about the magic.
There is no magic, Becky.
Sad and disappointed, Becky gets up from the edge of the bed and departs the room through a broken wooden panel in the wall. Outside the seminary, Sarah sweeps the autumn leaves around a statue in a courtyard. The girls in their uniforms spill out of the building around her.
Sarah, are you still a princess?
You better get back in line or we'll both be in trouble.
Are you?
Lottie! All right, girls, get in line.
In the kitchen, using oven gloves, the cook opens the oven door and removes a piping hot pie, then places it on a table covered with apples. Sarah sits in the corner of the kitchen, plucking a chicken. Amelia Minchin comes into the kitchen, only to be shouted at.
Don't touch that! For Mr. Randolph next door.
Poor man.
His son is missing in action over in Europe, you know.
You mean John? Oh, he's such a nice boy.
Yeah, very nice, very fresh.
Carrying her basket, Sarah staggers along the busy snow-lined streets when a smartly dressed boy hands her a coin. Inside a baker's, Sarah spends the money on a sticky bun.
Would you like to buy a flower?
Sarah watches a beggar woman with a newborn in her arms and two older daughters, shivering with cold as they try to sell their flowers.
Pardon me?
Would you like a flower?
Sarah approaches the family and offers one of the girls her sticky bun.
Give her a flower. Wait!
The girl hands Sarah a yellow rose.
For the princess.
Smiling sweetly, Sarah accepts the gift, then heads off through the crowds along the street. Arriving back at the seminary, she trudges through the deep layer of snow towards the side entrance. Before she reaches the building, she stops to look up at the window of the home of the man who was visited by the two military men. He sits in a chair before an open fire, with his head bowed. Ramdas stands behind him. Sarah places her basket in the snow and slides the yellow rose through the handles of the man's front door. As she moves away from the house, Ramdas pulls back the nets on the window and watches her go. Lying in bed, Sarah observes a mouse whilst chatting with Becky, who lies in her bed in the next room.
What is it, little mouse? Are you a prisoner too? Is it ever this cold where you come from? No. Tell me about it, Sarah. Tell me again about India. India. Tell me. Well, the air is so hot there, you can almost taste it. I bet it tastes like coconuts. No, it's more like spices, really. Curry and saffron. What else? Tigers sleep under trees, and elephants cool themselves in the lakes. The warm wind blows through the fields, and the spirits ride it, singing as they look down on us, and their voices echo through the mountains. And the sky is all different colors, like a peacock's tail.
Sarah falls asleep on her rickety bed, with Emily tucked under her arm. All of a sudden, she opens her eyes. The glass-panelled double doors immediately in front of her bed fly open. Snowflakes are blown swirling into the room. Looking towards the open doors, Sarah sits up in her bed. She gets out of the bed, and in an almost trance-like state, she slowly crosses the room to the doors. On the balcony of an adjacent building stands Ramdas. He's wearing his golden robe and cream brocade turban. He smiles at Sarah in a friendly manner. Raising his arms up towards the skies and lifting his face up to the falling snow, he closes his eyes and enjoys the sensation of the cold, wet flakes landing on his face. Sarah smiles broadly at him, mimicking his actions. With the wind in her hair, she stands in the doorway wearing her long, flowing nightdress. Sarah starts to twirl round and round amongst the soft flakes of falling snow. Ramdas bows to Sarah. She graciously bows back at him. A row of smoking chimneys on a rooftop. From out of a chimney pot appears a brush, followed by a young chimney sweep with a soot-covered face. A look of concern creeps across his face as he loses his footing and slips back down the chimney flue.
You can forget being paid this week. Grateful little wretch. Oh, no, you don't. I told you I wouldn't tolerate the slightest bit of soot in this house. And there, just look at my boot. It's filthy. Out, out! And take this ridiculous looking thing with you.
Standing in an alley by the bins, Sarah watches as Miss Minchin shouts at the chimney sweep. The boy picks up his brush and heads off along the snow-covered street. Sarah notices that he has left behind two buckets full of soot. She is struck with an idea as she looks at the buckets and then up towards the roof. Later, Miss Minchin sits before a log fire in her study, playing the harp. She stops playing as she becomes aware of a deposit of soot falling down the chimney. She goes to investigate, looking up inside the fireplace. On the roof, Becky and Sarah tip the rest of the soot down the chimney. In the kitchen, the girls are still giggling to themselves as they do the washing up. Amelia stands by the kitchen window as a man delivering milk comes down the stairs to the door.
Where might Miss Amelia be this morning?
Why, good morning, Francis. You're here early this morning.
A working man's got to get up early if he wants to have an effect on the world.
How true. And what a powerful effect you have, Francis.
Amelia looks longingly into Francis's eyes. He too stares back at her, then composes himself as he races back out of the door, but returns swiftly as he's forgotten to leave the milk and to take the empties. Another intimate moment passes between the couple before he finally shuffles out of the kitchen. Sarah struggles into Lavinia's bedroom, carrying a heavy basket of logs for her fire.
Where have you been? I've been chilled for almost half an hour. Hurry up and light a fire. And make sure not to touch anything else with your dirty hands. This is my room now, and I won't have you messing it up. Ugh! What is that awful smell? When was the last time you had a bath?
Rakshasna Yadnavastu.
What are you doing?
Shakambalu.
I don't believe in this. So you can just stop it! Stop it, I said! What did you just do?
Just a little curse I learned from a witch back in India.
Curse? Ha! What kind of curse?
You'll see. But I wouldn't brush my hair as much if I were you.
Lavinia checks her hair. In her dark and dingy room, Sarah sits on the floor playing with the mouse.
It's all right. I saved it especially for you. Go on, take it.
Grabbing hold of her candle, Sarah jumps up to her feet as she hears footsteps approaching her room.
Ermengarde, it's too dangerous.
Oh, Sarah, why don't you like me anymore? Did I do something wrong?
No, of course not. I didn't think you'd want me for a friend. Now that things are different.
Oh, Sarah, no. I'm sure you could do just fine without me for a friend, but I couldn't get along without you.
Oh, Ermengarde, I'm sorry. I should have known you wouldn't be like the others.
What's that?
One knock means I'm here. Two knocks means all is well. Three knocks means the coast is clear. The demon Minchinweed is asleep.
Gosh, y'all sound so adventurous.
Look, Becky, we have a visitor.
Hello, Becky.
Oh, Sarah, I miss your story so much. Won't you tell us what happened to Rama and the princess?
The smoke from Ravana's arrows finally began to lift. Rama lay dead on the ground.
Oh, no!
But then, a wonderful thing happened. The gazelle lay down next to Rama, giving him his own life.
In a hospital.
Suffering from acute amnesia, one of the rare side effects of poison gas. His eyes will heal in time.
No, no, no!
His memory, who can say?
He's not my son.
I'm sorry, Mr. Randolph. He was found in severe shock, with no coat, no identification. Since your son was the only name unaccounted for, they assumed this must be John. I am sorry.
Ram Dass walks over to him.
All the hoping. You must think me a fool.
Is it your wish to be wise, Sahib?
I don't know. I suppose a wise man wouldn't have come here at all.
But if he had, he would have looked more closely upon the soldier's face.
What would he have seen?
Pain, Sahib. He needs to be cared for.
He's not my responsibility.
A wise man would remember that this soldier was in John's regiment. If his memory returns, he might tell Sahib what happened to his son. Perhaps Sahib will learn that John is in British hospital now, wishing that a kind man would take him home, away from his pain.
At the seminary, Miss Minchin talks to her sister.
The plumber comes while I'm at the bank, show him the problem, and don't babble endlessly with the man. He's paid by the hour, you know. Oh, and make sure those Latin tests are corrected by the time I get back.
Yes, sister.
Hello, Miss Minchin. Goodbye, Miss Minchin.
The girls wait for Miss Minchin to leave the seminary, then organized chaos breaks out.
Oh, God, not again.
Amelia in a flap rushes out of the study and up the stairs looking for Lottie.
Not again.
Whilst Amelia is upstairs, Lavinia, Ermengarde, and another of the pupils sneak into the study.
Let's find the locket.
Walking along the streets in the cold winter's air, Miss Minchin puts on a pair of gloves, only to discover that one of them is missing. She looks around on the pavement in case it has fallen to the floor. However, it has been left on the desk in her study, where the girls are now rifling through her belongings.
Sarah, come quick! It's Lottie! I think she's possessed!
Meanwhile, Miss Minchin hurries back to the seminary to collect her missing glove. The three girls in the study freeze as the study door handle starts to turn. As the door opens, the girls are relieved to see a fellow pupil. Then Ermengarde opens a drawer to find Sarah's locket.
Will you please get that child under control?
Not to worry, everything's fine.
The girls are rooted to the spot as Miss Minchin starts to enter the room. However, Becky, who is standing in the hall outside the study, distracts her by screaming. This allows the girls to creep out of the room.
Well, what is it?
I thought I saw a mouse.
Miss Minchin crashes into the study door, which has been closed by the girls. Becky chuckles to herself. Amelia looks bemused as Lottie passes her on a half landing in a cheerful mood.
Destroy me? I'm just not cut out for this job. I have no patience for children and teaching. All those horrible facts to remember. I don't like it at all.
You like Francis, though, don't you?
What? Of course not. How dare you?
I think he likes you, too.
You do? Really?
I think you should run away together and get married. It'd be terribly romantic.
What an extraordinary thing to say. Well, anyway, my sister would be furious if she found out.
So? You'd be long gone by then. Living in some exotic paradise with that dashing young milkman. Well, better get to the market.
A new day. A car is parked outside the Randolphs' home. Ramdas assists the male patient out of the car.
You're doing well, young man. You're almost home. You must trust my eyes, Seki.
Nighttime in the seminary. Becky covers Sarah's eyes with her hands. Downstairs, the girls leave their bedrooms in their nightgowns. They all carry candles as they tiptoe along the landing. Quietly, they creep up the rickety wooden staircase to the attic room to visit Sarah and Becky.
What's going on?
It's a surprise.
What are you doing here?
We brought you something. Princess Sarah, we'd like to present you with something we rescued.
In a most dangerous adventure. Our very own crusade.
Risking all our lives.
And mine too.
Sarah is presented with the locket.
I don't know what to say. You all are the best friends anyone could ever ask for.
Just my little monkey friend, Hanuman.
Where did he come from?
right next door. Look, Hanuman likes to come and visit me all the time.
Can you really talk to him, Sarah?
Sure. Hanuman, say hello to all my friends.
Downstairs, Miss Minchin is turning out all the lights. In her bedroom, Lavinia brushes her hair. She stops and studies the brush, then pulls out one of the hairs. She looks at it wide-eyed, then passes out.
After Rama came back to life, he raced on towards the monster's palace to rescue Sita. Suddenly, Ravana appeared.
Miss Minchin stops in her tracks in the hallway as she thinks she may have heard something. Sarah covers the mouths of her overexcited friends.
I think we better save the rest of the story for later.
The girls gather at the open door in Sarah's bedroom as they watch the monkey scoot along the rooftops and back to his owner. Ram Dass smiles at the girls and bows to them.
What's going on here?
It's not their fault. I asked them to come.
You five, get downstairs immediately. I'll deal with you later. Becky, you will remain locked in your room for the entire day tomorrow without meals. Go! And you will perform all her chores in addition to your own without breakfast, lunch, or dinner. It's time you learned, Sarah Crewe, that real life has nothing to do with your little fantasy games. It's a cruel, nasty world out there, and it's our duty to make the best of it. Not to indulge in ridiculous dreams, but to be productive and useful. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes, ma'am.
Good.
But I don't believe in it.
Don't tell me you still fancy yourself a princess. Good God, child, look around you. Or better yet, look in the mirror.
I am a princess. All girls are. Even if they live in tiny old attics, even if they dress in rags, even if they aren't pretty or smart or young, they're still princesses. All of us. Didn't your father ever tell you that? Didn't he?
If I find you up here with any of the girls again, I will throw you out into the street!
Furious, Miss Minchin scuttles out of Sarah's shabby room, then locks her in. Standing on the landing, she pauses to wipe away a solitary tear from her eye. Sarah slumps down onto her bed. She takes comfort from the pictures of her parents contained in the locket.
What are we going to do? A whole day with nothing to eat.
Don't cry, Becky.
I'm scared. If Minchin throws me out, I got no place to go.
It's not true. I'm here with you. I've always thought of us as sisters.
You have? Let's make a promise right now to always look out for each other.
It's a promise. Now, what are we going to do about food?
Starve, I guess.
No. There's only one thing to do. We'll eat a great feast before we go to sleep, and that will keep us full all day tomorrow.
Feast? What feast?
Just look around. Do you see that table over there? It's covered with a beautiful cloth, and candles, and trays of good things to eat. Come on, Becky. Tell me what kind of food there is.
I don't see any food.
Try, Becky. Just make believe it. Remember what you told me about the magic?
Muffins?
Good. What kind?
All kinds. Every kind of muffin God ever made. And all of them hot.
Good.
We're not dressed right for such an elegant banquet.
I'm wearing a long velvet cape with fur on the collar. How about you?
Well, I always like diamonds myself. Rings and bracelets and a whole dress just covered with them.
Smell those sausages.
Oh, I love sausages.
From his balcony, Ram Dass smiles as he watches the children play. He then turns to look at the patient lying in a bed with a bandage over his head and eyes. The monkey sits on the bed by the side of the man. Images of Sarah's story. The Indian prince firing a bow and arrow at a monster. Lightning strikes and the princess comes rushing out of the tower, running straight into the arms of the prince. Sarah lies in bed asleep with a smile upon her face. The monkey jumps on top of her. As she wakes up, she is surprised to find that her room has been transformed with flowers, curtains, and silk bed linens in golden colours. At the end of the bed, a pair of golden slippers and a robe awaits her. Delighted, Sarah puts them on. A round table is covered with a lavish display of food, including a dish full of sausages. Sarah breathes in deeply, smelling the aroma.
Becky! Becky!
Oh, my Lord. I think you went a little too far this time.
It wasn't me.
Becky puts on her slippers and robe.
I feel like I've been touched by an angel.
And look, just what we ordered.
I'm a little scared about all of this.
Me too. You think we shouldn't eat it?
I'm not that scared.
Thank you for all your kindness. I'm so sorry to inconvenience you.
It is nothing, Sahib.
That word. It sounds so familiar, and yet I don't know what it means.
It is not English. We use it where I am from. In India.
India?
You know it?
No. Everything's just a blur. Maybe someday I'll sort it all out.
You will, Sahib. You will.
Above the New York City rooftops, a full moon hangs in the dark night sky. In the shadows, Francis and his milk float can be seen in the cobbled courtyard outside the front of the seminary. Inside the building, Amelia quietly descends the sweeping stairs with two suitcases in her hands. As her sister comes along the corridor to lock the front door, she slips behind the door of an adjacent room and hides. Outside, Francis tries to attract the attention of Amelia.
Yo-ho!
Hey! Francis!
Amelia throws her suitcases at Francis from out of a window. Amelia climbs onto the window ledge and squeezes her buxom figure through the window, landing with a thud on the ground below.
Oh, my God.
Francis?
What is all this? Where'd it come from?
I don't know. I just woke up and it was here.
You stole all of it, didn't you? Just like you stole this locket!
No!
You're nothing but a dirty little thief. It's my responsibility to protect the children of this school from animals like you!
But Miss Minchin!
It's your things. You'll be leaving with the police very shortly!
In Mr. Randolph's house, the patient is on his feet in the bedroom. He closes the doors onto the balcony, shutting out the pleas of Sarah. He then unravels the bandage covering his face. It's Captain Crewe.
You heard me. I want her picked up immediately.
Miss Minchin slams the telephone receiver down, then in anger, throws the locket across the room. As it lands on the floor, it springs open, revealing the photos inside. In Mr. Randolph's house.
You've removed the bandages.
There didn't seem to be much point. I can see all right.
Yes, well, come on in. Have a brandy.
Thank you.
Don't worry. I'm sure they'll believe you.
No, Becky. I have to get out.
But how? My room's locked, too.
The monkey enters the room, runs over to Sarah, and jumps up onto her head. Standing in the doorway, Sarah watches as the monkey climbs back over the rooftops to the Randolph's house.
Quick, help me with this board!
Right this way.
Yes, ma'am.
In the pouring rain, the girls place a plank of wood from their balcony across to the Randolph's. Police climb the stairs to the attic room. Looking at the drop below, Sarah plucks up the courage to walk along the narrow, wobbly plank. Miss Minchin enters the room with the police. She grabs Sarah by her belt.
What is she doing? Get back in here this instant!
Sarah slips on the plank. She lays across it, clinging on for dear life. Regaining her balance, she scrambles along the plank on her tummy towards the Randolph's house.
The little beast is running away!
I'll try it, miss!
The plank of wood starts to shift, slipping off the Randolph's balcony. Sarah tumbles towards the ground when she reaches for a ledge. Grabbing onto it with one hand, she hangs suspended from the ground. The police, Miss Minchin and Becky all look on in horror. Using all of her strength, she manages to cling onto the ledge with both hands, then manoeuvres her lower body up onto the platform.
Oh. Well, don't just stand there. Go next door and find her.
Becky smiles at her friend as she climbs to safety.
And take this one while you're at it.
Inside the neighbouring house, the monkey leads Sarah down the stairs.
I heard you calling in your sleep last night.
Sometimes when I dream, I sense a part of me that's missing. It's a strange feeling having your heart remember something your mind cannot.
She seems like she jumped like an animal.
Man.
A child from the school has escaped into your house.
Ramdas, what's going on here?
I'm sorry to bother you, but there's a child hiding in your house unlawfully.
What?
Search the rooms upstairs.
Now, Ramdas, get some candles.
Sarah finds a quiet room to hide in.
Stop at the attic.
Let's go.
Right, sir.
Quickly.
Who's there?
Shocked, Sarah staggers backwards into the corner of the dimly lit room, sliding wearily down the wall into a heap. She hugs her legs up close to her chest and starts to sob.
What is it? Why are you crying? Please tell me. I won't hurt you. Such a pretty name. Sarah.
Sarah lifts her head and looks closely at the man standing over her. Her eyes widen as she recognizes her father. Ramdas stands by Captain Crew's side, willing him to remember. Miss Minchin stomps off as Sarah and her father lovingly embrace. Ramdas and Mr. Randolph look delightedly at one another as they watch Captain Crew with his daughter. Springtime. Blossom trees and yellow flowers surround the seminary, now called the Randolph School for Girls. Captain Crewe opens the door and heads out into the sunshine. He walks towards Ramdas and Mr. Randolph, who are in the courtyard together.
Well, well, well. Hardly recognized you. I'm glad you straightened everything out.
They released all my property back to me. I just came to say goodbye, sir, and to thank you for everything you've done for us.
No more than you tried to do for my son.
Take care, Mr. Randolph.
And you too. You must be glad to be going home.
Thank you.
Captain Crewe smiles to himself as he watches his daughter and Becky, dressed in elegant outfits, exit the school holding hands. The rest of the girls who are playing in the courtyard run over to join them.
I have a surprise for you all.
Emily!
Whenever you think of me, just tell Emily, and she'll get the message to me. And when you hug her, she'll really be getting a hug from me.
And we'll hug her every day.
Unsmiling, Lavinia comes out of the school and stands on the steps watching her. Sarah sees her out of the corner of her eye and goes over to her. Standing face to face, Lavinia, suddenly and unexpectedly, hugs Sarah.
Bye,
Come on. Miss Minchin works as a chimney sweep. The girls stand on the steps of the school, waving goodbye to Sarah, Becky, and Captain Crewe as they ride away in their horse and cart. The end.